Welcome to another episode of the Alter Your Health podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. If this is your first time listening, hello and welcome. We value your time and energy and hope you receive a lot from tuning in. As a listener-supported show, we rely on you to help us grow. We'd be so grateful if you share the show or a favorite episode with a friend or fellow health seeker. Living a healthy and nourishing life doesn't always come easily, especially in today's crazy world. But that's why we're here, doing what we love, hopefully helping you along with information and inspiration that fuels your health pursuits. If you're looking for more support, consider subscribing to the monthly meal guide membership. Just $11 per month gets you access to a weekly meal guide filled with healing and delicious whole food plant-based recipes, along with invitations to our regularly scheduled support calls where we can connect, answer questions, and keep the good vibes flowing in our healthy lives. You can learn more at www.alter.health/meal-guides. And if you're looking for more in-depth support, check out our other services. We offer both one-on-one consulting as well as educational programs. All of our current offerings are listed at www.alter.health. Our ultimate goal is to empower you to heal yourself. Keeping with that theme, let's dive into today's show. Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Alter Your Health podcast live. Here we are on Facebook in our plant-based and stress-free Facebook group, and on Instagram at Alter Health. And this podcast, for those of you just tuning in for the very first time, where the heck have you been? Because this podcast is your source of information and inspiration to promote and support the holistic transformation of your health and the health of our planet. My name is Dr. Benjamin Alter. I am your host.
My name is Dr. Susanna Alter, your co-host. And we're both naturopathic doctors who support individuals in reversing disease and reclaiming optimal health through whole food plant-based nutrition and mind-body medicine.
So today on the podcast, we've got a really interesting topic, one that we haven't excavated beneath the surface to support you in understanding how the circadian rhythm works and how to actually recalibrate your circadian rhythm and what it has to do with your health and well-being and your body's ability to heal. The fact of the matter is that it's really important. It's hugely important because the circadian rhythm is, you know, we'll get into it in more depth, but it's essentially, in a nutshell, it's kind of like the body's clock. And it's like if that rhythm is not rhythmic and that cycle is not cyclic, then we're all going to be out of whack. So it's about, you know, really syncing up in a healthy way, being in harmony with nature and with our body's ideal physiologic functioning, so that things are turned on when they need to be turned on and things happen as they need to happen in the body.
Exactly. And it's so important also because we talk about this all the time, but sleep is such an important essential ingredient for anyone who is wanting to heal, reverse disease. When you sleep, your nervous system is in a more parasympathetic state, which is really the rest, digest, and heal state. And so making sure that you have adequate sleep is essential.
You guys know this. And like what you said, Susanna, sleep is actually the only time that the body is full on in parasympathetic mode. When we are awake and operating in our world, we're going to have some sympathetic activity that keeps us alert and whatnot. But when we're asleep, in a restorative and restful sleep, not put to sleep with alcohol or sleeping medications, but actually in a restful, restorative sleep, then our body is really able to fully heal. That is when our body heals. That is when our body regenerates. That is when our, that's when all the good stuff happens. We detoxify and everything.
Yes. Yes. So, okay. Well, how about we start by talking about what the circadian rhythm is and what happens? What are the hormones floating around in the body?
Yeah, let's spit it out.
Okay.
So it all has to do with your cortisol and your melatonin. These are, like, you know, to really simplify things, the cortisol and the melatonin in your body are essentially your circadian rhythm. And your cortisol levels are pretty much in opposition with your melatonin levels. So in the morning, your cortisol levels come up and then naturally decline throughout the day in a normal, healthy individual. And as your cortisol levels decline throughout the day, you come to bedtime and your melatonin shoots up. And that supports us in, once again, going into that restful, restorative sleep. And it's interesting that over our lifespans, a lot of things happen that essentially have the effect of, to some degree, throwing this rhythm out of whack. So that's why it's so common for people to experience sleep issues more so as they age. And that's why when, you know, you're a baby, you don't have any issues falling asleep, really, unless you're my niece. I think my niece had some real big sleep issues, but I don't think it was melatonin deficiency or anything like that, or calcified pineal gland or anything like that. Things that we'll get into, and we'll talk about ways to recalibrate and reestablish this normal circadian rhythm. But that's really what it is in a nutshell. Anything else that you want to add in terms of beyond those two basic hormones?
That's it.
That's it. So the cortisol is, of course, secreted by adrenal glands. Melatonin is secreted by the pineal gland, which is literally in the center of our head. Some people even call it the third eye. The third eye is kind of our pineal gland because in addition to melatonin, this is obviously a whole big can of worms that we're not going to get into, but there's a lot of, you know, DMT, that's a hormone or a neurotransmitter that's secreted by the pineal gland that's associated with kind of end of life, near death experiences and out of body experiences and transcendental mystical experiences. So the pineal gland is really kind of a mystical endocrine gland. And so one thing that can happen that can, over the course of a lifespan, can throw the circadian rhythm out of whack is that the pineal gland, like other glands and organs in the body, can become calcified. You hear about the calcification of your arteries, calcification of kidneys, and calcification of stones in your gallbladder and all these kind of things. The fact of the matter is that, you know, anything can calcify when there is too much calcium in the system without proper proportions of other minerals and vitamins and whatnot. The most important one being vitamin K. Vitamin K tells the body where calcium needs to go, which is predominantly in the bones. So if we have a lot of calcium and not a lot of vitamin K, we end up calcifying all sorts of stuff, including our pineal gland. And the other thing that a lot of science shows us is that excess fluoride in our system, predominantly from the fluorination of water to, I don't know why they fluorinate water, but it's
for teeth, of course.
Oh, for teeth health, which has been, you know, I think it's been debunked that fluoride actually supports the health of our teeth. But nonetheless, there is fluoride in the water, which if you don't have a water purifier, water filtration system, you're probably drinking fluoride throughout your life, which leads to the calcification of the pineal gland. As the pineal gland becomes more calcified over your lifespan, melatonin production goes down. And as melatonin production goes down, restful sleep goes down. As restful sleep goes down, we become cranky and we don't heal and we don't feel good and we take naps throughout the day. We take naps throughout the day and our circadian rhythm gets all whacked out. So that's one big thing in this broad circadian rhythm conversation that we need to think about and talk about is that calcification of the pineal gland. But that's kind of I started there because that's kind of the last thing to talk about, because there's so many other things that are more within our direct momentary grasp that we can actually accomplish in our lifestyle beyond the decalcification of the pineal gland, which does happen once we stop taking the fluoride in, once we increase vitamin K, once we kind of support these kind of detoxification pathways and whatnot in the body, things do decalcify. Mm-hmm. But beyond pineal gland calcification and melatonin production, what are some things to talk about with regard to reestablishing optimal circadian rhythm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we talked about melatonin a little bit. And we'll talk about it a little bit more probably. But also, you know, part of what really causes this dysregulation in circadian rhythm is people secreting too much cortisol throughout the day or secreting cortisol at inappropriate times throughout the day. First of all, I just want to say cortisol has been a hormone that's kind of been demonized. You know, people say, oh, it's the stress hormone. Oh, cortisol, it's cortisol that's causing everything wrong in me. But, you know, the truth is we need cortisol to survive. That's why it surges in the morning when we wake up, or at least it should surge in the morning when we wake up. That's when we feel most alert,
That's when
most,
we
you
should
know,
feel most alert.
yes, yeah, ready to start the day. Before a lot of people, they actually wake up and their cortisol is lower than it should be optimally, and it'll increase in the afternoon or even in the evening, making them feel, you know, anxious or just awake at night, which interferes with restful sleep, of course. So really, what's important to regulate this cortisol secretion is optimizing what we call the HPA axis in the body, which stands for the hypo
Hypopituitary adrenal axis.
thank you. And so
Hypopituitary pituitary adrenal. Hypopituitary is the H, pituitary is the P, adrenal is the A.
Yes. And so, you know, if you were to ask naturopathic doctors, how do you support the HPA axis? There are so many herbs, so many supplements, so many things you could do in that nutraceutical world, but really the most foundational, you know, basic place to start is looking at your mindset, looking at where stress and your body's stress response ultimately comes from, which is
Yeah.
not a lack of ashwagandha or a lack of, you know, vitamin B or
Or
whatever.
rhodiola or Eleutherococcus or
Right.
Schisandra. Yeah, you know, what just occurred to me is that we're talking about the circadian rhythm, which really is this circle, this cycle. And for a lot of people, the cycle is wonky and out of whack, and it's like not a cycle, right? And in order to reestablish a cycle, it really comes down to normalized habits and patterns and healthy, normal, rhythmic behaviors. The body loves rhythm in that sense. The body loves rhythm. So if we can reestablish just normal practices that I'm not asking that everyone live their same Groundhog Day life every day of the world, every day of the week or whatever. That's not healthy, but if we have healthy practices around morning time and around evening time, what I like to say, you know, just the bookends of the day, that can really help to reestablish this cycle, this rhythm, this habit for the body to reprogram. So in the morning, you know, let's talk about just in the mornings ways to enhance cortisol, ways to optimize that cortisol surge, which actually usually happens even before our eyes blink open in the morning, right? It kind of leads us to wake up in the morning. But in the morning, it's really healthy to look at the sun, to look at a natural source of light. You know, hopefully we're waking up around the time of the sunrise. So if we can look out the window or step outside, better yet, and look at the sky and look at the sun rising, that actual the light on our retina can help to support the regulation of our pineal gland and the you know and reestablish these, you know, there's a lot of neurochemistry that's happening, you guys, but reestablish that HPA axis and everything by just looking at the light in the beginning morning hours of the day. And then, you know, while you're at it outside looking at the light, put your feet on the ground, take some breaths, you know, stretch, drink some water, you know, practices that just stimulate and awaken the body from within.
Yeah, on top of that, you could even bring in exercise into your morning routine, which does actually help to stimulate production and release of cortisol
In a good way.
in a good way. And yes, that can also, I mean, we talk about this all the time with patients of ours who have sleep issues, is Are you actually
moving
and burning energy throughout the day? So exercise can play a really big role in this. If you don't have time in your morning to really do a huge exercise routine, that's okay. Maybe you can find some way to bring it into your morning commute, whether that's parking, you know, several blocks away from where you work and ending your commute with a little bit of a walk. You could get creative with it. But one thing we say about exercise is that it's really not advised to exercise within 2 hours of going to sleep because, again, at night, we're wanting cortisol to ramp down. And if you do a big, you know, sweaty exercise right before bed, there's going to be a lot of cortisol. You're going to be feeling pretty awake, and it's probably going to interfere with sleep.
Totally. So we love, you know, things like high intensity interval training, a 10 minute, a 15 minute or 20 minute workout that really is great at boosting your energy, boosting your cortisol, boosting your endorphins, boosting your circulation, and turning on your circadian rhythm, so to speak, like flipping the circuit breaker. So those kind of exercises are great. And also what's coming to mind, and it always comes to mind, is hydrotherapy practice. In the morning, hopping in a cold shower, you guys, I'm not talking about just like cold straight off the bat necessarily, but take your shower, take your morning shower, or hop in a sauna, or do your hot, sweaty exercise, and then end that with a cold shower, or end your hot shower with a cold shower. And that really is a great way to kind of, I don't know, the way I see it does everything. It's like, I don't know why I love this analogy in recent times, but it's like it flips the restart button, the circuit breaker, so that you're just alive and awake and functioning hopefully on more cylinders than you were before.
Yes.
So
I guess while we're talking about morning practices, it would be appropriate to discuss one of the most common and popular practices that many Americans practice.
And not only Americans, people around the world. This is the most common ritualistic practice that is a habit for so many,
which is to drink coffee. And one might say, oh, well, hey, coffee stimulates production of cortisol and adrenaline. And so, hey, it's great that I'm drinking it in the morning. That's when my cortisol should be high, right?
It's better to drink in the morning than drinking in afternoon or in the evening. That's for darn sure.
But one issue with coffee or caffeine, you know, you can drink your, I know people who drink energy drinks in the morning, for example. The issue with that is that these drinks, they put an extra strain on the adrenal glands, that organ that secretes cortisol. And over a period of time, over the course of a lifetime, for example.
Or even over the course of a year.
Yeah.
Or
being
less.
In college or whatever it is, and also being under stress, your adrenal glands can get a little bit tired of this constant demand that's put on them to put out more cortisol. You know, some people call this adrenal fatigue or adrenal dysfunction, whatever you want to call it. But what can happen is that this can be one of the big causative factors for why people aren't producing enough cortisol on their own in the morning. So they wake up, they don't feel tired. Oh, I need my coffee. Whereas if people, you know, get out of this habit of needing coffee, maybe they have some warm lemon water in the morning. You know, that's enough. They don't need the coffee. They're naturally producing enough cortisol on their own.
Yeah, tap into that inner coffee, you guys. That's the message. Tap into your inner coffee. And it's in there. It really is. And another issue that coffee has for so many, if you just consider the pandemic of sleep disturbance. It literally is a pandemic. So many people around the world are really struggling with less than adequate quality and quantity of sleep. And one of the main underlying factors of this, you guys, is the overconsumption of caffeine, of coffee. So if you have any sleep issues whatsoever, coffee is really one of the most important things to cut out. It doesn't even matter if you drink a half a cup of coffee at 7 in the morning, It doesn't matter. It could be and probably is getting in the way of your body's normal circadian rhythm. As we just put in that, you know, it's like if there's this normal harmonious rhythm and then we're trying to kind of overpower it or like turn it on with outside forces and like stimulate it with different things, then it just throws it all out of whack.
Right.
And we suffer the consequence.
Right. Plus, some people aren't efficient at detoxifying caffeine so it can stay in their system longer. I know we don't need to get into that, but you know, for some people, it is that small amount of coffee in the morning that really can impact their circadian rhythm.
Yeah, so moving throughout the day, it's like, all right, morning, wake up, engage in these vital kind of like tap into your inner coffee sort of practices. And then live your life, eat whole foods and nutrient dense foods, and stay hydrated and stay connected with nature, take deep breaths and all of these things that we know how to do. And then when it comes time to
wind down
and tap into your inner melatonin, things like avoiding screen time at night become really important, because we know that blue light from our screen actually blocks the production of melatonin. So melatonin, just like cortisol, is produced when we're kind of exposed to sunlight, and there's all this neurochemistry that takes place. When we're exposed to darkness and when the sun is going down, that's actually what triggers our eyes and brain to start releasing melatonin. So once again, we don't want to be under fluorescent lights at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. rather. We don't want to be in front of a bright screen at 10 p.m. We don't want to be with all these stimulating sounds and noises and visuals that is going to keep our circadian rhythm out of whack. We want to kind of just, I like to just consider, like, you know, if human beings throughout the most of history have been essentially camping, like we were essentially, you know, camping throughout most of human history, and now we're in these dwellings. But like, how can we sort of camp out? You know, maybe candlelight, maybe dimmer lights, maybe less screens, maybe cups of tea, maybe reading books. And you guys, you know, Susanna and I, we're guilty of this. We love our screen time too. We do. But if we can just start orienting ourselves like around, if we can orient ourselves around how to kind of pretend like we're camping out, that's really the best way to tap into your inner melatonin.
Yeah, and this is really, really big for people who do suffer from insomnia, is you know, making sure that also your sleep environment is ideal, that there aren't lights in your bedroom or light shining in through the window. Sleeping in darkness can really help that retraining of the pineal gland. And, you know, also people who don't sleep, sometimes they'll get up and do stuff, right? Or they'll read, or they'll, you know, go into the other room and turn the light on. And really what's best is to, it might sound boring, but it's to stay in bed, to stay in your
really?
Dark room.
I mean, I've heard different things. I've heard like if you're totally not sleeping, to like actually get up and not like.
Well, yeah. For the sake of retraining the pineal gland, you want to get that cyclical rhythm going in, right? You almost want to train your body and your brain to be in bed and at the time that you're supposed to be in bed. So,
well, definitely not getting out of bed and like, you know, turning on the lights and doing something that's going to like literally wake you up.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, if you're feeling restless in bed, it's okay to get out. That's what I've always known.
Yeah, well, I think it depends on the individual.
Yeah.
I'd say for people who just have one weird restless night here and there, whatever, get up, do whatever you want. For people who are actually trying to retrain, you know, to get their sleep cycle back on track, I'd say it's probably best to stay in bed. But, you know, like I know you want to move on, but maybe we disagree on this.
I mean, no, I get you. It's when we're talking about reestablishing habits. Yeah. Yeah. Give yourself the habit of being in bed. But yeah, if you're feeling totally restless, don't, because I think for a lot of people, it's like, they're in bed, I'm awake, what do I do? oh my gosh, I'm thinking these thoughts. My thoughts are waking me up. I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling even more restless. I'm feeling restless about feeling restless. I'm feeling anxious about feeling restless. And then it leads. So sometimes allowing that restlessness to actually move them out of bed and, you know, just following that wisdom, it can be okay. But the other thing I that we didn't talk about in the evening time, a practice that so many people engage in, which sabotages their circadian rhythm health, is the ingestion of alcohol, ethanol, which is a direct poison toxin to the human body. And, you know, it's toxic to the liver. We know that. And also when we metabolize or break down alcohol, when the body breaks down alcohol, we create a molecule that literally stimulates the production of cortisol. Does it stimulate the adrenal glands directly? Or
I
no,
know
it's
a stimulant. I don't know if it's producing cortisol or adrenaline or what.
Yeah, it is a stimulant. It's acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde is the breakdown molecule of alcohol, and that is another neurotoxin that stimulates us. I think from the level of the brain and not directly the adrenal glands or anything like that. But this breakdown product of alcohol, because if you think about it, you know, you have your cocktail, you have your glass of wine, you feel good, you feel sleepy, you're in a good mood, you pass out, you fall asleep, you go to sleep, and then your body breaks down that alcohol and releases this acetaldehyde that literally wakes you up. And then it's 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and you're like, wait a second, I was just passed out, and now I'm like, have a headache and have a dry mouth and I'm lying in bed and I feel restless. It's because of that molecule that is present in your system. So anyone suffering from sleep issues, if you're with us thus far, the two most important things are breaking the habits of caffeine and alcohol, which are on either end, those bookends sabotaging your circadian rhythm. And I know this is not the information that you want to hear, but this is the information that is actually going to support you in sustainably healing.
Yes.
Not just, you know, we're not here to tell you to take this supplement to counteract the effects of caffeine and that supplement to counteract the effects of alcohol. Sure, there are supplements and pills and potions that you can take that can kind of offset the damage being done. But in order to completely reverse and restore and regenerate optimal, natural, healthy, organic health from within, you got to take away these things that are sabotaging your health, not just add more things into the mess.
Yeah. One other thing that could be sabotaging sleep is also eating right before bedtime. It's also good to allow, you know, 2 to 3 hour window of time between your big meal, dinner, and going to bed.
Yeah.
That process of digesting your food can also stimulate the, stimulate you in a way that keeps you awake.
Yeah. So. I want to end by sharing one fun fact about melatonin. We know that melatonin is really responsible for supporting us in achieving that quality, restful, restorative sleep. But we know that melatonin is also a really, really strong antioxidant. And in fact, you know, what's just popping into my mind, I saw some study related to COVID-19, the coronavirus pandemic, suggesting that people with low levels of melatonin were at a much higher risk of developing severe symptoms compared to people with regular, normal, adequate levels of melatonin. And that's because melatonin is a really potent antioxidant. It's also really supportive of optimal immune function. So if we think about the consequences, the holistic long-term consequences of that calcified pineal gland, of that dysregulated circadian rhythm, it is deficiency of antioxidant status within your body and a deficiency of your normal, healthy, adequate, strong immune response. So if we just extrapolate this melatonin deficiency over the course of your life, then we see that, oh, well, yeah, endothelial dysfunction, heart attacks, strokes, cancer, all of these sort of things, which are consequences of oxidative processes in the body and immune dysregulated processes in the body really come back to a circadian imbalance. So I know that, you know, you might not be thinking about those long-term consequences, but actually, if you are tuning into this podcast, you probably are thinking about the longer-term health consequences. And I just want to point out this really important thing about melatonin being more than just that sleep molecule.
So I have two questions, and then we'll say goodbye. First one, so then should people who have sleep issues supplement with melatonin?
Yeah, well, there's definitely so melatonin supplementation is totally okay for some people. Like some people actually have, what am I trying to say? Like a paradoxical effect where melatonin actually stimulates them and keeps them awake. And I think that's because we can't really fix a natural, organic, harmonious issue with some outside force. We can't really fix it for good. We've got to rely on our body's innate intelligence to really fix something for good. But maybe for some people in some situations, kind of kickstarting the circadian rhythm with some melatonin supplementation can be good. Melatonin is also used in higher doses, like 3, 5, 10, 20 milligrams and stuff, in the context of cancer treatment and really from an immune stimulating capacity and antioxidant capacity. But 1 milligram of melatonin a night might help some people in reestablishing their circadian rhythm. And the cool thing that I learning about melatonin is that there is no feedback loop. So we actually can't become quote unquote dependent on melatonin supplementation. So it's not going to do any damage. But like I said, for some people that there is that paradoxical wakefulness that can be experienced.
Second question that someone in our group asked, are there any natural night owls, people who just thrive staying awake at night?
Yeah, that is a really good question. I don't think so. I think that the night owl phenomenon is a learned habit, not something that you're born with. But I could be wrong. That I don't know. I don't have any real hard science to back up that opinion of mine.
Yeah, the one thing that we do know is that night shift workers have a lot of, this has been studied, that they're at higher risk for developing chronic diseases.
Specifically cancer. Mm-hmm. Specifically cancer. Night shift workers who have a flip-flop circadian rhythm, low melatonin, are at increased risk of developing cancers. So if you're working night shift, my heart goes out to you. Hopefully you're able to find a way to get out of that shift. That's really the best thing that you can do for yourself. And I don't intend to like implant fear or anything. And, you know, if we're eating a whole food plant-based diet and doing all of our lifestyle factors, obviously that the increased risk of cancers and chronic disease is going to be slashed yet again. If we can, then we encourage you to get out of your night shift. Call in sick. I don't know. Take a doctor's note. That's it.
That's it.
This was a longer one, but I think we covered some good stuff. We even got into a lot of sleep hygiene stuff, which is important. And sleep well, you guys. Hopefully you learned something. If you did, feel free to share this with someone who might have a wacko circadian rhythm, because it's a common phenomenon in our world. And just another reminder, if you are not already in the plant-based and stress-free Facebook group, for those of you tuning in on YouTube or iTunes or any other podcast platform, we are sending you an invitation to join the group, facebook.com/groups/alterhealth. We've got an upcoming whole food plant-based challenge happening in this group. This one is called the Stress-Free Series. It's happening starting May 25th in the plant-based and stress-free group. So feel free to come on in. Feel free to invite your friends. It's going to be a lot of fun. Anything else that I missed?
That's it. You got it all.
All right. We're off. Good night, you guys, or good day.
Good night.
Maybe you're at least listening to this while you're restless in bed, but hopefully not. But
We should have talked about napping.
Napping another time. We'll talk about napping another time because I don't know what you wanted to say.
Okay, napping another time.
All right, peace and love. Until next time.
Bye for now.